Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Danny and Sunday have crashed! They've gone into each other!
I wasn't listening. I have no idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there, I am Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds. Three races left of 2020. It's been a good little season so far. I think we obviously had concerns that there wasn't going to be a season at all at the start of the year with coronavirus hitting. And we finally got a load of races that come over the summertime. And it's been an actually thoroughly enjoyable season so far. Hamilton, of course, is the seven-time world champion. Mercedes are the constructors' champions. So there's not a lot to play for at the top. Obviously, very, very tight race in the middle. There's millions of pounds that can all be won by the teams in constructor points, whether they're third, fourth or fifth. It's, you know, a difference of like $10, $11, $12 million for those places. So lots to fight for in the middle ground. Three races left, the first of which is Bahrain this coming weekend, the Bahrain International Circuit. Because we've got two, haven't we? We're going to be doing this one, which is the normal Bahrain Grand Prix. And then next weekend is going to be the second Bahrain Grand Prix, which is the International Circuit, which is the outer circuit, which is somewhere we've never been before.
Yeah, George Russell today was saying he's looking forward to the bonkers outside or out outer ring of the Bahrain Grand Prix circuit, as he describes it. Yeah, looks. I don't know whether it's going to be a really interesting race because obviously it's going to be fast. I think lap times they reckon are going to be under a minute in that second weekend. I don't know whether it's going to be really interesting or really boring because there's a couple of sharp turns on that long circuit. So, you know, there are overtaking opportunities, but it could be a bit processional. So I'm not really sure. I mean, the original Bahrain circuit that we're racing on this coming weekend, it's always produced some pretty good racing. You remember a few years ago, Hamilton and Rosberg having that real battle on the track towards the end of the race, and it was just fantastic. So it does produce some decent overtaking, and it is quite exciting. We've seen multiple crashes at turns one and two in the Bahrain Grand Prix, which always makes it fairly interesting. And I like the layout of the circuit. It's a Herman Tilke track again. Some of his, I think, are really good and some I'm not so keen on. He designed the Turkey circuit, which is one of my favourite tracks. And he's designed this one in Bahrain as well, which I think is probably up there as decent tracks. I think the drivers like it and it's a good spectator track as well.
Now, am I right in thinking, I don't know if it's this weekend or next weekend or both, but they're going to be running them slightly later, so it's a full night race instead of a more of a dusky race that we usually get in Bahrain. I think they're running it slightly later from what I've read, but because that I've missed that. I missed the Singapore Grand Prix, and you know, when you have a full night race and you can see the driver's eyes through their visor really clearly because of the night, and you know, the cars look incredible when they're all kind of glossing away and glistening in all the lights and they just look brilliant. And I have missed a night race this year, so I hope that is true. I don't know whether both of these races are going to be night races or if that is in fact true or wrong information, but yeah, excited for the Grand Prix.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the this weekend, certainly the timing, so the race starts at 10 past 5 UK time, I think, which means that it's 10 past 8 in Bahrain. I'm getting my Middle East clock back in my head. Yeah, I think 3 hours ahead. So, yeah, definitely full nighttime races. I think some of the early practice sessions on the Friday will be in daylight and dusk, but apart from that, it's a full night race, which is good and always pretty spectacular. So, yeah, I think it'll be a good circuit as well. In terms of these cars being slightly longer and slightly faster than they were last year, plus the tyres could play a part. As far as I know, it hasn't been resurfaced, which has been the sort of the watchword of the season, really, hasn't it? You know, have you had your track resurfaced? Yes, we have. Ah, okay. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting race, and it's one that certainly the battle for third place. Those teams really need this race to go their way. I'm talking Racing Point, McLaren and Renault, that, you know, and Ferrari. They need decent results at these last three races, and it all starts in Bahrain this weekend.
Yeah, it's incredible to think, if you thought a couple of years ago that Ferrari would be as far down as they are in terms of, you know, they've always been in the top three, haven't they, for as long as I can remember, and they've always been up there, you know, competing for wins and for poles and stuff like that. And they've just had a really shocking year this year, and to think that they may be fifth or sixth, you know, if they don't get their stuff together for the last few races, just unbelievable to think about that. But like I said earlier, you know, $11, $12 million is the difference between third, fourth, and fifth places. So a lot of money. You know, if you're third and you drop down from third to fifth or sixth, that's a huge amount of money you're losing, which of course is great for the teams that get it, not so great for the teams that don't get it. But it's so tight, isn't it? And a lot of those drivers as well, your Lando Norris's, your Carlos Sainz, you know, they're all kind of in that ballpark. Ricardo, there's a lot to play for with those drivers as well. And even second place in the championship is not guaranteed to go Bottas's way. There's not a lot in it between him and Verstappen. So if Verstappen has a crack in the last three races and Bottas has, some issues or doesn't finish a race, could easily be Verstappen in the second place of the championship.
Let's talk about Ferrari a little bit. Binotto sat out of the Turkish Grand Prix. He said it wasn't important for him to be at the circuit, which I just think is nuts. He was at Maranello and he was watching the race live and apparently had the ability to talk to the pit wall and to the drivers. If he wanted to, that would have been an interesting speed dial on his home phone, wouldn't it? And he's also confirmed that he's not going to be in Bahrain. I just think this is nuts. He says he only needs to be present at the Grand Prix during difficult times. He's the head of Ferrari Formula One. Why wouldn't he be at the Grand Prix? What's going on? I don't understand. Someone from Williams, because you remember the team boss of Williams, now that it's come away from the Williams family, he tested positive for COVID-19 just before the Turkish Grand Prix, so he wasn't able to be there. And he talked about how difficult it is sitting in a control room in the UK trying to manage your Formula One team when they're racing in Turkey. So how is it difficult for him? But Binotto finds it fine with his feet up, no doubt with a strong Italian coffee in his hand.
Yeah, I think it's important, isn't it? It's one of those job roles. If you take a role like that on, you know you're going to be working at the circuit, you're going to be traveling the world, you're going to be spending a lot of time away from home, and you need to be at the circuit, you need to be a leader, you need to be in charge. And, you know, for a team like Ferrari to be kind of looking around for who's second in command, are they at the track or are they at home as well? And, you know, it's just a very strange thing for the drivers and for the engineers to be kind of very unled at the Grand Prix races themselves. And, you know, again, a team like Ferrari, I mean, they've had some incredible bosses over the years, but I'm not a big fan of firing people for the sake of it and moving on. And I think football is terrible for this. I think a lot of the managers, you know, they don't get enough time to bed in and they get rid of managers too quickly and they sign them up to 5-year deals and fire them after 6 months and all that kind of stuff. And it does happen a little bit like that in Formula One as well. But, you know, if you're going to take one of these roles, you've really got to put everything into it. And although I don't want to see Binotto fired or anything like that, you know, he really does need to change his style, I think, of management, because he just seems too laid back, too chilled out, you know, and a bit like, well, you know, whatever. What will be, will be. And, you know, we've said it before about the drivers. They need that cutting edge to them. They need that kind of feel where they're, you know, your Verstappens, your Hamiltons, they're selfish. You know, they get on the radio and they're racing for themselves. They're racing for the win. And you need a bit of that. You need that hunger, that selfishness, that, you know, that just that edge to you. And I think Binotto's kind of like, you know, we'll get there eventually. It'll all be good. And that's not the mentality in Formula One. You've got to be the best all the time. If you're not winning, you need to be angry. And, you know, someone like Zak Brown is a good example where if he wins, he's like, this is brilliant. This is amazing. The team's had an incredible race. But if they lose, he's angry. He's upset. He's, you know, he throws his toys out of the pram. That's kind of how you need to be, because you need to say to the team, look, guys, this isn't good enough. We're getting there, but we need to get there quicker. We need to work harder. We all need to work together. You know, and if you've got no one at the circuit doing that and having those speeches with the guys, it's just bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very strange. I mean, they finished third and fourth in Turkey, so that's brought them right back into contention for P3 in the Constructors' Championship. They got 130 points. They're 24 behind Racing Point, who are in third position at the moment. Three rounds to go, so they could easily do that. You think that you'd want the leader there motivating the team. Sebastian Vettel said after Turkey, he said, well, maybe it's a good sign that Binotto's not here because we've scored the most points of the season. I think there's no love lost between those two. No. I think, you know, that relationship soured a long time ago. I think Vettel relishes the fact that his boss isn't there. You know, and I've worked, you probably have as well. We've worked with bosses that we'd rather would see less of, you know, that would be an advantage to us. But, you know, maybe that's the same for Seb. Maybe he feels more motivated when Binotto's not around because in Seb's eyes, he's the guy that's kind of finished him up at Ferrari.
Yeah, and I think this is what we talk about when we say the sweet spot. You know, this is where Mercedes have got it nailed, where Toto has a great relationship with his drivers. He's got a great relationship with the engineers below. He's got a great relationship with everybody in the team. Everybody respects him. Everybody looks up to him. And he's a great leader and he's calm. You know, he loses his temper. But one of the things I've noticed about Toto that I think is brilliant leadership you will see something happen in a race that doesn't go their way. And he'll literally punch the table with anger. He's that angry and that riled up about it. He's punching the table. But by the time he gets from punching the table to the media and the cameras, he's got his head together. And the camera, you know, the interviewers will be winding him up like, you know, what happened there? Was that Hamilton's fault? Was that Bottas's fault? You know, who's at fault? What's happening? And all, and he's very calmly like, listen, no one's to blame. We need to go back and look at the footage. We need to talk about it together as a team. We'll work out what went wrong. We'll move forward. Very, very diplomatic. You know, doesn't blame anybody. Doesn't put anybody at fault. Then they'll go back and sort it out behind closed doors. And that's kind of, that's the sweet spot, isn't it? And that's proven, you know, with the success they're having. It's just an incredible team. He seems like, I've never met the guy, obviously, but Toto Wolff seems like the kind of guy that I would get on very well with as a boss. And I think him and Lewis get on great. Him and Bottas got on great. And I don't see very members of that team not getting on with Toto. And I think that's the difference. Ferrari, you've got Binotto and Vettel have obviously fallen out. You know, Binotto's not even at the races. You see a lot of engineers that are very, they seem downtrodden and downbeat, and there's no, you know, no one's there to pick them up and G them up. And it's just, you know, and again, the Zak Brown effect at McLaren. I feel like when Zak Brown came in at McLaren, they turned a corner a little bit. He was very positive, very upbeat, you know, a racer at heart, loves his cars, loves his racing, you know, has some fun with the drivers, has fun with the team. And it's that thing of knowing when to have fun and enjoying yourself, but also knowing when, you know, visor down, this is business, we've got to nail this. And Ferrari just don't seem anywhere near that at this point.
No, they don't. And talking to Zak Brown, he's been talking this week about Fernando Alonso, his old friend and colleague. Obviously, Alonso going to Renault next year. And Zak Brown reckons that Alonso is going to be very difficult to beat in that Renault car. And he thinks that Renault will finish ahead of McLaren. Why would you say that? And is there any truth to it?
I mean, again, you know, Renault are doing very, very well. All of a sudden, they've got their stuff together, haven't they? And that car's looking pretty tasty, depending on the circuit. And Ricciardo's very much got his head around that car. Sadly for him, he's leaving next year, but, you know, he's getting there. It's a good little team. It feels like it's coming together. It feels like good vibes. I think announcing Alonso returning to that team has kind of given them a bit of a boost and made them think, you know, wow, we won the title in 2005 and 2006 with Alonso. We can do it again. And that's kind of given the team a bit of a spurt. I read somewhere the other day, I don't know how true this is, and it basically said, you know, the Renault team have got their work cut out with Alonso coming back because he wants the team to test, I think it was the 2022 car. He wants to test that on the 1st of January because that's the first day they're allowed to or something. And basically saying New Year's Day's gone because the Renault team have got to go to the simulator to show Alonso the new car and get him to test it. And he's adamant he wants to be in that car on the 1st of January. So again, goes back to what we were saying, doesn't it? If that is true, I don't know how true that is, but if it is true, that shows the drive and the determination of Alonso and the fact he wants to be world champion again, and he will drag that team up with him. But, you know, the Renault guys and girls have got to get, okay, you know, we've got to work New Year's Day. We've got to, forsake our New Year's Eve. And, we, you know, if that's what it takes to become champions, we've got to do it. But, you know, if he's talking about stuff like that already, I think it will be quite hard to manage in that team. But we'll see how that all pans out.
You've got to admire his preparation. He spent most of this year sort of in the Renault simulator. He's visited the factory on multiple occasions. He really wants his comeback to be one that's important for him and important for the points that he might be able to score. I think everyone looks back to Michael Schumacher's comeback after he left Ferrari, took a 3-year sabbatical and then came back and went into the Mercedes. Now, the Mercedes car he came back to was nothing like the Mercedes car that they have now, but it was a bit of a damp squib, wasn't it? It was a bit disappointing. I remember speaking to James Allen the week that Schumacher returned to Formula One. I was quite excited. I said, well, this is going to be great. You know, he's going to be at the front of races. He went, believe me, he's not. He's just, you know, he's too old now. He's lost the edge. And he was right in many ways. So let's hope that doesn't happen. But his preparation's been very thorough.
I think for Alonso, it's excitement. I think he's gone away for a couple of years. He's really missed it. And he's got his mojo back. He's gone and done some other racing that he's really enjoyed. And I think he's like, do you know what? I love this. I love racing. I love Formula One. I love being in the fastest cars in the world. And he's got that excitement back again. And he's going to come back all guns blazing. And I think it's going to end well. I think it's going to be a bit of a success story. They're becoming the Alpine Formula One team, of course, not the Renault team from next year. But I can see him being world champion again. And I think if he can get a third championship and then retire, you know, it will be a success story in the fact that he got two and then left and came back and got his third and a bit of a Niki Lauda type, you know, movement. But I just think it's something that he needs to do. It's like he needs to just get that third title
And for him, that'll be, you know, because I think he's been, I think we said this before, he was 10 or 11 points away from being a 5 or 6 time world champion. I mean, that's it. 10 or 11 more points. That's a couple more places in a couple more races. And he would have been, instead of a 2-time world champion, a 5 or a 6 world champion. You know, so I think he knows that. He knows he's made a lot of wrong moves in his career. He knows this is probably his last move he's going to make. And I think he's coming back like, you know, red rag to a bull. I think he wants to make this work.
Yeah, it's going to be, make it, you know, next year exciting. Alonso back and Vettel in the Racing Point, which will now be the Aston Martin team. It's going to be good. Talking to Michael Schumacher, I see that Rubens Barrichello came out this week and said that he thinks Hamilton is a better driver than Michael Schumacher. There's loads of debates on who is the best ever in the world. I tend to agree with the people who say that Hamilton is the best driver of his era. And people like Jim Clark were the best drivers of their eras, and Senna. You know, I don't think, because of the different times that we've gone racing, you know, over 70 years, I don't think you can just have a one standout driver who you would say is the best. Some people like to do it, but I'm more of a fan of drivers who were the best in their particular era in the sport, because of course it's changed so much over the years. But yeah, Barrichello says Hamilton's better than Schumacher, and you know, maybe there's no love lost between those two. Barrichello was asked to move over several times when he was Schumacher's teammate, but what do you think of that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I completely agree with what you said there. I think, you know, Fangio, Jim Clark, Stirling Moss, you know, I'm trying to think of the others. Ayrton Senna's a great example as well, Alain Prost to an extent. You know, each in their era were incredible. And I don't think you can't compare Fangio to Hamilton, for example, because it's a very different car, very different era, very different everything. But, you know, what you can do is look at the win record. And I think Fangio won somewhere in the region of half the races he entered. And it's not far off that for Hamilton as well. And again, Schumacher's up there on those. So you can kind of look at those kind of stats, I think, and go, you know, these guys are similar. But it is, it's an era thing, isn't it? And the cars, you know, would Hamilton be as good driving an 80s Formula One car? Would Senna be as good in a modern day car that we have now? You know, and then there's the age thing and the experience thing, and you throw all this in, and like you say, it's the unearthed question. But without a doubt, Hamilton is the best of this era, you know, and it will take an awful lot of beating. Schumacher is up there as well. Ayrton Senna is definitely up there. If I had to pick one single driver for me, it would be Ayrton Senna. But I think that's just because it's a bit of a package thing of, it was me growing up when I was watching Formula One, so I loved him for that. I think in his day, he was just unbeatable. What he could do with that car was incredible. And I just think the whole story of Ayrton Senna, for me, that would make him my number one. But I agree with you. Every year has had a number one, and I think that very much depends. What I will say is a lot of the drivers are coming out now, and it's interesting because some of them, I think Carlos Sainz said this the other day. He said, I agree that 90% of the drivers on the Formula One grid would win in the Mercedes. He said, however, I don't agree that if you were teammates with Hamilton, you'd win much. And he said, I think it would be a similar story as it is now with Hamilton and Bottas. Like, you would very much be a number two driver because Hamilton is that much better, but you would win all the other races. And I think that's a good way of looking at it, because I think a few of the drivers have kind of said, you know, Hamilton's only won because he's in the best car. But, you know, as we said on the last race, you know, where was Bottas? Hamilton won the race. Where was Bottas? He was like, you know, he lapped him. So it's not all about the car, you know, it's what you do with it as well. And I do believe that a lot of the drivers would win in that Mercedes, but I also believe Hamilton is a little bit special.
Some Formula One news in brief then. Ricardo says he's looking forward to Bahrain because of the heat. He says he's been a bit depressed with the cold weather at the European rounds of the season that we've had recently, of course, because it's been getting colder in Europe. He's looking forward to the warmth of Bahrain and thinks it will make an incredible difference to the warming of the tyres, which, you know, you would higher track temperature, you'd think that the tyres will switch on a lot quicker. Also, Monza, I've got a contract with Formula One to host races until 2024. And they're coming up to their 100th birthday. And exciting news for Formula One fans is there is a plan to restore the oval circuit at Monza, not unfortunately for Formula One races to be held on, but other disciplines of motor racing, which would be just fantastic. I've walked round that circuit. It's the steepest thing ever. You struggle to walk up it. It's that steep. Very, very interesting indeed. And they're also talking about changes to the Formula One circuit at Monza, which might mean removing one of the chicanes to make the track even faster than it currently is. So that's something to watch out for. And as we head to this weekend in Bahrain, calls, and apparently it's already a done deal, Lewis Hamilton to be Sir Lewis Hamilton. A lot of people saying, well, hang on, he lives in Monaco and he doesn't pay UK tax, so that's always an argument. I've always wondered, you know, if they're going to give this to Hamilton, then why didn't David Beckham get the knighthood he really wanted? I just never really understood that. But, yeah, Hamilton... looks like it's going to be Sir Lewis Hamilton by the end of the year, the New Year's honours list to be announced shortly.
Yeah, I, although I agree with that, and I think he probably should be a sir, I am a big fan of making that move once their career is over. You know, once they announce and say, right, that's it, I'm retiring from this particular sport, and this is what I've achieved, and this is what I've got, and then I'm going now, I'm going to go and do some gardening or whatever they're going to go and do, then to make them sir, I think is a great thing, because it's like a respect thing of, you know, what an amazing career. Well done. Here's your knighthood. Congratulations. Whereas when they make them a sir, when they're still racing or when they're still playing whatever sport it is, I find that quite bizarre, because he will turn up at the track in 2021 and it'll be, hello, Sir Lewis. And, you know, I just find that strange. And he's, you know, he's what, mid-30s as well, isn't he? That's very young to be a sir.
Yeah, it certainly is. So, well, we're heading off to Bahrain this weekend, and we're going to be there for the next 2 weeks, obviously, with the two different race configurations. Let's hand over to Nikki at Lights Out, who's got all the pre-race stats for us.
Hamilton searches to equal his personal best of wins in a season. Mercedes look to lead their 150th race, and Red Bull attempt to get a car on the front row for the 100th time. Here are some of the top stats to look out for over the 2020 Bahrain Grand Prix weekend. Having secured his 7th title by winning his 10th race of the 2020 season at the Turkish Grand Prix, Lewis Hamilton could equal his personal best of most wins in a single season this weekend. A win at the Bahrain Grand Prix would be his 11th of the year. He also won 11 races in 2014, 2018 and 2019. Hamilton could still equal the all-time record for most races won in a single season if he wins every remaining race this year. Furthermore, a victory this weekend would see Hamilton equal Sebastian Vettel's record of most Bahrain Grand Prix wins. This weekend, both Mercedes and Red Bull could do things that few teams before them have done. If either Lewis Hamilton or Valtteri Bottas lead a lap of the 2020 Bahrain Grand Prix, this will be the 150th Formula One race in which a Mercedes driver has led. That would make Mercedes the 5th team to reach the milestone, after Ferrari, McLaren, Williams and Lotus. Meanwhile, after celebrating their 300th race start in Turkey, Red Bull could become the 6th team to have had a car appear on the front row at 100 Grand Prix. So far, there have been 99 races where a Red Bull driver has appeared on the front row. Most recently, Max Verstappen, last time out in Turkey. The 53rd lap of the 2020 Bahrain Grand Prix will be the 900th racing lap to take place at the Bahrain International Circuit since F1 first visited in 2004. If he completes every lap of the race, Kimi Raikkonen will be one lap short of equaling Fernando Alonso as the driver to have completed the most Grand Prix laps in Bahrain. Raikkonen has completed 726 racing laps at the circuit so far, compared to Alonso's 784. If he doesn't do it this weekend, the Finn is likely to surpass Alonso's tally at next week's Sakhir Grand Prix. And finally, with Mercedes already crowned Constructors' Champions and Hamilton having won the Drivers' Championship at the Turkish Grand Prix, this will be the first dead rubber Formula One race since the 2019 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. It's the first time that F1 has visited Bahrain with both titles having already been decided, making Bahrain International Circuit the 23rd different track to have hosted a dead rubber Grand Prix. 2020 will be only the 11th season to feature three or more races where both titles have already been decided. All of the last 24 dead rubber races, that's all of them since the 2002 United States Grand Prix, have been won from the front row of the grid, while all but one of the last 10 have been won from pole position.
Nice one, Nikki. You can follow him, of course, across the race weekends on Twitter, at Lights Out is where you can find him. Loads of great stuff across the race weekends, all his blogs and his different pie charts and all these exciting, amazing facts about all the races and the drivers across the weekend. So yeah, the first of two Bahrain Grand Prix happening this weekend. It's going to be dusty. It's going to be hot. I'm excited for a bit of racing. We've had a weekend off, so I'm excited to get back to it. And I'm excited to see what Bahrain brings to us, particularly Bahrain at night as well. You can't rule out Hamilton again. I think he's on just such incredible form. The thing with Hamilton is, he's won the World Championship. He's won the Constructors' Championship along with the team. He won't go, I'm done now, I'll let someone else win. He'll still try and win the last three races. Oh, yeah. That's what I love about him, because it still matters, doesn't it? And he's getting very close to 100 wins, very close to 100 pole positions as well. And that must be in the back of his mind, that he could be the first driver ever to go into three digits on those. So I don't think you can rule out Hamilton. I think the Red Bulls should do quite well this weekend. And again, like you say, the tyres, you know, because it's going to be warm, the tyres should switch on. I think we could see McLaren's, the Renaults, everybody could have a good weekend this weekend. It's quite hard to call a top three, I think.
Yeah, I think Racing Point are going to be up there again. I really do. I you know, they're not going to have the tyre issues that hampered them in Turkey. And with that in mind, I think they're going to bring a very fast car to Bahrain. So I think Racing Point will feature somewhere on the podium. Hamilton, almost certainly on the podium. Bottas, don't know really. I think, you know, his head dropped three races in to this season, and it's never really risen again. So I'm going Hamilton on. I'm not going to go first, second, and third. I'm going to say Hamilton on the podium, a Racing Point on the podium, probably Perez, because it looks as though he's going to be out of Formula One, and you know, it would just be crazy for him to be on the podium for the last three races and then depart the sport, which I think would be a massive shame. But I think, yeah, Perez on the podium, and I'll say Verstappen on the podium.
I love how the fact that we're so bad at predicting these race wins, we're now just not picking drivers. We're going a Racing Point, a McLaren will be on the podium. I think I'm going to say Ricciardo is going to get a podium. Ricciardo, Verstappen, Hamilton in no particular order, but that's my top three.
So actually, just had a look at the times for Bahrain. So I was saying it was 5:10, thinking it was UK time, but it's not. It's 5:10 in Bahrain, which means it's 2:10 in the UK. So virtually a normal time for us watching the race. And interestingly, though, I thought it was going to be a full night race, Scott. But if it's 5:10 in Bahrain, from memory of being over there, it doesn't go dark till 6:00. So the race effectively is going to start in the late afternoon sunshine, then go through dusk and into a full night race about halfway through, I think.
Yeah, and that's kind of what they normally do, isn't it? Bahrain, that's normally how it sort of ends up, I think. I'm confused, but either way, 2:10 sounds good to me. I'll have a cup of tea or a beer ready, depending on how my weekend's going, and I'll be ready to watch the race.
We'll be back next week to talk all about the first Bahrain Grand Prix of 2020. Enjoy the week. We'll see you soon.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.